your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Rest make dab in the middle. We are. Rest make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a week here that's unfolded, and finally the Democrats took power in the House, and Nancy Pelosi made some speeches and brought some grandchildren into the gallery to celebrate her newly acquired Speaker of the House position, which she's been Speaker of the House before. And there, it didn't go without a ruffle or riots of other people, you know, and one even was using very, very, dirty words to describe an impeachment that they planned for President Trump. But anyway, we're going to start our program with a real quick clip from ABC News describing the takeover of the House by Nancy Pelosi. Here we go right now. Listen carefully.
Historic power shift in Washington. Democrats taking over the House and making history with the new makeup of Congress. Nancy Pelosi, the first woman to ever be Speaker of the House, now returning for her second run in the role, calling the session to order with her grandchildren, inviting all of the children and grandchildren in the chamber right up to the podium. Calling it a new dawn, Pelosi welcomed the most diverse group of representatives the Congress has ever seen. And in a surprise move late today, President Trump appearing in the White House briefing room with his own message for Speaker Pelosi.
Thank you.
And a reminder tonight, despite the pageantry we saw today, it is now day 13 of the government shutdown. 800,000 Americans are waiting to get paid. Many others won't even get back pay. Mary Bruce leads us off from the Hill tonight.
With her grandchildren by her side, a beaming Nancy Pelosi made a triumphant return to power.
The next Speaker of the United States House of Representatives.
With the passing of the gavel, President Trump, for the first time, faces a divided Congress.
2 months ago, the American people spoke and demanded a new dawn. They called upon the beauty of our Constitution, that our system of checks and balances that protects our democracy.
Pelosi herself making history for the second time.
I'm particularly proud to be a woman Speaker of the House of this Congress, which marks the 100th year of women having the right to vote.
There are now 102 women in Congress, more than ever before. Among them, the youngest female member, New York Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Their diversity is also historic. The first Muslim American Congresswoman, Democrats Rashida Tlaib, who was sworn in on Thomas Jefferson's Quran, and Ilhan Omar, who came to the U.S. 23 years ago as a refugee from Somalia. Pelosi invoking Ronald Reagan to send a pointed message on immigration.
He said, if we ever close the door to new Americans, our leadership role in the world will soon be lost. Ronald Reagan. Your applause for Ronald Reagan.
Then she summoned her grandchildren to the podium.
Okay, look, we've all been waiting.
I now call the House to order on behalf of all of America's children.
Pelosi takes power on day 13 of the government shutdown, but at the White House in an impromptu visit to the briefing room, warm words from President Trump.
I just want to start off by congratulating Nancy Pelosi on being elected Speaker of the House. It's a very, very great achievement. And hopefully we're going to work together and we're going to get lots of things done, like infrastructure and so much more.
But the battle lines are already drawn. Congressional Democrats, now armed with subpoena power, are preparing to investigate all aspects of the president's administration and campaign. And Pelosi's not ruling out that Trump could be indicted while still in office.
I think that that is an open discussion. I think that is an open discussion in terms of the law.
So let's get to Mary Bruce live up on the Hill tonight, watching this all unfold today with us. And Mary, a lot of Americans also watching history play out, but likely also asking, when are you going to get the government back open? 800,000 workers waiting to be paid. As I mentioned before, many others won't get back pay. And another meeting now set at the White House for tomorrow?
Yes, but David, so far talks are going nowhere. And today the president is again digging in, insisting he will build his wall, even though Democrats say that's simply not going to happen. Despite all this, the two sides are going to sit down at the White House tomorrow and go another round.
The Democrats taking over the House, or they're going to raise holy hell. There's one proposal to go back and study money laundering between Trump Enterprises and the Russians and so forth. Boy, they're really, you know, crazy on some of their proposals. What's coming up is this Tyler representative using cussing words and stuff about some kind of an impeachment on Trump. So listen to this. Here we go right now.
Just hours after making history as the first Palestinian-American woman sworn into Congress, Michigan Democrat Rashida Tlaib is sparking a firestorm. Caught on camera telling a crowd last night what she told her son about the president.
We're going to go in there. We're going to impeach them all.
The president firing back.
I thought that was a great dishonor to her and to her family. I thought it was highly disrespectful to the United States of America.
Tlaib ignoring reporters today.
Yeah, we're trying to talk to your mom.
But on Twitter, doubling down, writing, "I will always speak truth to power." New Speaker Nancy Pelosi at an MSNBC town hall.
Generationally, that would not be language I would use. But nonetheless, I don't think we should make a big deal of it.
But Tlaib pushing impeachment on day one, even before the Mueller report, prompting a barrage of Republican backlash.
How do you work with anybody if this is what they really have planned? Using foul language, they introduce that they just want to impeach the president.
And some Democrats warning it could backfire.
You cannot accomplish very much of anything unless you have civility. I think those kind of comments do not take us in the right direction.
One progressive Democrat reintroducing articles of impeachment, a growing flashpoint in a new Congress. Kristen Welker, NBC News.
It's going to be a tumultuous type of Congress, this new session. And the Democrats do have subpoena power on the committees in the House that they're overseeing and they're in control of. So they're going to be issuing subpoenas up the gazoo to try to bring people in to testify, and just like this latest proposal, one of the committees of going in and looking at money laundering that Trump is supposedly guilty of and so forth, and that's going to be, you know, boy, I tell you, this thing is so out of control. I mean, it's not just a little bit, it's crazy. What we have going on now is very, very crazy. And we have more and more people trying to come across the border all the time also. And, you know, people are expressing the opinion, oh, Trump's met his match, you know, and the president, he is quoting that Tlaib dishonored herself and, you know, her family and so forth, in cursing like that about some kind of an impeachment thing. So, that's just, you know, just, The fight is on. He's saying some conciliatory things. People are saying, Rand Paul was expressing the opinion the other day that Trump should go ahead and settle for about $2.5 billion towards the wall and make a deal, with the Democrats. He's asking for $2 billion right now and he seems to be wanting to hold that out. This last meeting that he had with, a delegation of not only cabinet members, but also congressional leaders, it broke up and there was some, you know, optimism. But when they got back and started making statements that they weren't going to budge either side, well, then no real progress had been made. There's back channels that are always underway on these types of negotiations where they're trying to do things behind the scenes and so forth to see what's going on. Another very interesting thing was expressed, just recently, and it had to do with this David Janta. He's a broadcaster, and also he's being interviewed quite a bit. He made some statements about at the funeral there in Washington. I think we covered this somewhat last week. There were these envelopes, and he's expressing an opinion, possibly, that George W. made a deal about, you know, cooperating with Trump's people for these so-called these seal indictments and things like that are going on behind the scenes. So I'm going to kind of play that next and get sort of a taste of what is going on from either side, both the Republican and the Democratic side. This is something that possibly is breaking on the Republican side for their advantage against the Democratic side. But here we go now with Janta.
When you watch that video of the funeral service, you'll see that Laura was surprised by the note that was given to her. Not the thing that fell out of a program, but what was handwritten, I believe, by W. And Jeb, as I said, shouldn't be a poker player. He looked like he was going to vomit. But the guy who seemed nervous, but when he was obviously involved in this, in a sense that I believe, from what I understand, W flipped a number of months ago.
Wow, that's news.
And remember, the day before the funeral,
he flipped to give states evidence to save himself.
Not just himself. I here's what I believe he did. If you remember, the day before the funeral, all of his W and Laura, just those two, Trump arranged for them to stay at the Blair House across the street from the White House. And they also had another meeting at the White House. Just W and Laura were invited. And I believe that this is where President Trump, if you will, kind of went through, okay, here's what's going to happen at the funeral. Here's what's going to happen. Here's when this is going to happen. Here's when that's going to happen. Here's when this is when you're going to do this. This is when you're going to hand the stuff to Laura. Okay. And I believe several months ago, and remember, it is also my understanding that it wasn't just George H.W. Bush that ran the family business, that Barbara was actively involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, she died earlier this year.
Yeah.
He's been ill for an extended period of time. And it, from what I understand, George W. had a point, he came to a point in his life where he said, look, I can't be involved in this stuff. I've had involvement, but I can no longer be involved in this kind of activities. And I believe he reached out to President Trump and could well have said, look, I will give you information on everything.
Cheney's got to go down.
Across the board. No one's safe.
Cheney's got to go down.
Obama's, Clinton's, all of them. Okay? And when it comes to issues that you and I've discussed, whether it's human trafficking, whether it's the drug trade, whether it's whatever information, I believe he said, I'm coming clean, but this is what I want. I want not just for me, but for my family. And I'll tell you how in a confirmation I have of this. Remember the day after the funeral.
Yep.
Who did President Trump nominate to be his attorney general designate?
A former Bush AG, is that right?
William Barr.
Yeah, William Barr.
At one point it held the attorney general position under who? George H.W. Bush. And I believe the part of the deal, and everybody said, we can't figure this out. You know, Trump must be a globalist if he put this Barr in there, who was the attorney general for a period of time under a globalist George H.W. Bush. This is horrible. Here's why I think that happened, Greg. I think part of the deal that was constructed with W was, look, you hand over all this information, and we go after all these folks, all not just the middle-level puppets, including Soros, but all these folks all the way up the food chain, like you're talking about, Rothschilds, Rockefellers, Pacers, Pincuses, Warburgs, all of them, okay? But to assure you that we're good on our side of the deal is we will put in William Barr, who was the Attorney General under your father for a period of time. And Barr, I think, ultimately, what he'll do is he will push the Bush family to the side as far as prosecutions. And I believe he'll focus more on the other side of the ledger, that being Clinton's, Obama's, and a lot of these other players.
After Trump was elected, Admiral Rogers made a special visit, head of the NSA, to Trump headquarters there at Trump Tower in New York. And it is believed at that meeting that he disclosed to the president-elect that he was under surveillance and intercepts were being made of all of his activities. And that next day, Trump moved his transition team and so forth to New Jersey. So what has been going on in the background, according to rumor and some facts and so forth, and other people testifying about what has been going on behind the scenes, is that Trump has been gathering information on all these adversaries and listening to their conversations. So he has evidence of possibly treasonous activity. And we get back to these sealed indictments. They may or may not contain indictments against some of these people for these treasonous activities. So Janta is hypothesizing or conjecturing that possibly George W. Bush just got tired of the whole mess. He said he saw them digging a hole that went nowhere and would bury him and his family. And possibly he did flip over to the other side and ended up cooperating. But with the proviso or promise by Trump and others that the Bush family would be left out. Now, George Herbert Walker Bush was heavily involved from the JFK assassination onward, according to many sources. So I'm not stating facts here that he was, you know, specifically, you know, positively involved. There were photographs that look like him outside the Texas School Book Depository and so forth. But Bush, old man Bush, has been involved with the CIA, been director, been the president one term and so forth. So he had a lot of inside information. Then comes along his son, George W., who served two terms in the White House and so forth, with Cheney as the vice president. Now, that's where a lot of the behind-the-scenes skullduggery has been going on with Richard Cheney, see. And that's why many people are more possibly going after Cheney than anyone. Many of those envelopes, the video is showing, and you have probably about 100 people on the web that are making comments on those, them receiving those envelopes. And Hillary was surprised and so forth, and Biden got one. We think Pence had one slipped into his folder that he didn't look at. His wife had opened up the folder for the ceremony there in Washington for the funeral of George Herbert Walker Bush, and we did see an envelope in there that resembled the others. So we don't know for sure what the feedback is there. We do know that President Trump did not greet him when he walked in to the cathedral at the beginning of the funeral. And there were points in there, too, that Trump didn't show any respect, for George Herbert Walker Bush at his funeral at the time. That points in there. So we still have this battle going on. And it gets down to where Steve Bannon made a speech at the Oxford Club. And also recently, Pompeo was over there at the German Foundation, you know, of German fund and all that. Foundation. And so they're both talking about the return of the nation state versus this new world order that Bush and all of them and Hillary and Merkel over in, Germany and all that have been pushing. Angela Merkel has been at most of the, almost without exception, the last 4, 5, 6 Bilderberg meetings, and they're the ones that want to plan out this new world order. Is that Bilderberg group, see, that meets annually, usually in June, around the first week of June. And they're movers and shakers and very, some of the ultra wealthy in the world. And they want this new world order, and they don't want America to get in the way of this new world order. And Trump, that's the reason they have problems with Trump, is he got in the way of their new world order, and he wants to take us back to a nation state basis, which they're against. And he wants to revive this country, and he's doing all of those things. So that's really where they're after him right now. This is where it's getting dangerous. And, it just goes on and on and on. Now something has come to my attention just recently, and, it's very, very important. And, it comes out of ground zero. Okay. And, it's very interesting in the fact that, Ground Zero is Clyde Lewis's program, okay? And he's out of Oregon, Portland, Oregon, I believe is where he broadcasts. And he has some very, very interesting subjects that he gets into. He's a little bit too much on the occult side for me, but I did run across a recent show. It was Friday, I believe it was, because I listened to it pretty late. When I'm driving back home or something, I'll turn it on. Here in the Austin area, he broadcast between 10 and 12, I think. And then I believe Coast to Coast AM comes in with George Norrie after that. But what he basically had going there was he was talking about a couple of recent you can say, presentations on Netflix, okay? And, one of them was called Bird Box. And, it gets into some very, very interesting things about what's really going on in this country, in the, sense that he gets in, like they call, predictive programming and things like that, which are very, very real, okay, and being reeled, then you're going to be able to really being able to give insight to these real things that are going on. He had Ryan Gable on his program Saturday night, Clyde Lewis, and they were talking about Bird Box, and it says Netflix posted a tweet claiming that over 45 million people had streamed its new horror movie, Bird Box. And he'll go on to explain it later, but we'll talk about it in more depth after you hear this short clip that came right off of his program Friday night. So this is Clyde Lewis with Ryan Gable talking about Bird Box. And the other movie was a Black Mirror episode called Bandersnatch. And they'll be discussing both of those. So anyway, listen to this carefully and see what you think. And then we'll discuss it a little bit when we come back. And then I'll also quote an article that Clyde Lewis wrote about this. And it's a very, very good article. So listen to this carefully. Here we go now.
Ryan Gable is my guest tonight on Ground Zero. As he pointed out, in Bird Box, you hear a news reporter before the news report goes dark, before the power goes out. And the news reporter says, do not go outside, avoid social media. Now, I believe that Bird Box is actually a metaphor for Twitter, for social media. And there's also a scene where a character, and I hope this isn't a spoiler for people. It's just, I speak generally. I don't speak about detail. There's a scene where a character believes that if he sits at the computer screen and he observes the images of these shadowy invaders from outdoor on an outdoor cam, he thinks he's able to see what is happening without the incident, without him committing suicide. He says, if I sit here and watch my cam, maybe we can see what they are, what our invaders are,
I don't think I'll commit suicide if I see him on the camera. So the whole scene is terrifying because you know what's going to happen. You sense what's going to happen. The character looks like he's on the computer with his eyes glazing over. And this is what hardens my resolve, because over the years we've heard of many people, mostly young Americans, that have been coerced into doing silly challenges on social media that have led to serious injury and death. As you said, we had, you know, the Tide Pod Challenge, we had Cinnamon Challenge. But you may remember those, but also we remember things like Momo and the Blue Whale. And people like saying, how would anybody be able to commit suicide by, you know, doing the Blue Whale Challenge or the Momo Challenge? Well, I mean, if you look at what you're told to do with this this programming, people tend to think that it's about wearing people out, starving them, and then they eventually feel like they should kill themselves. Like, one of the things was dangle your feet over a bridge and then eventually jump and die, which is, of course, another choice in Bandersnatch, which I don't know. I mean, it just seems to me that this is reprogramming all over again. What do you think, Ryan?
Yeah, it is, and it comes, as I said earlier, in so many different forms, just like in Slender Man, the movie, which is a manifestation of the meme that was simply an internet meme that turned into a movie and several suicides, or in the case of some girls in Wisconsin, the stabbing of a girl 19 times. There are so many parallels, Clyde, between Bird Box, and I'm sure when I watch Bandersnatch, I'll see it as well, and technology, transhumanism, depopulation, to more darker forms of occultism, lighter forms of occultism. There's so much to analyze. We really have to be very precise in how we break down certain things, which is what we're trying to do here on Ground Zero, and which is what I do on my show, The Secret Teachings. I did notice something I wanted to mention to you about part of this programming, because we hear things, of course, but we watch visually the film, and that's where we're getting half of what we're processing that gets basically dumped into the subconscious.
Right.
I noticed something that relates to some other shows we've done, Clyde, like the Stranger Things show and the show about him, His Infernal Majesty. And that is, there's a scene where they go, again, no spoiler, but there's a scene where they go to a grocery store to get some food. That's all I'll say. And Sandra Bullock's character, she ends up getting this little toy for one of the other people staying at the place where they're held up at.
The Hello Kitty.
That toy is the Hello Kitty. Now, if you've ever heard the legend of Hello Kitty, the legend of Hello Kitty is that a woman had a daughter who had mouth cancer, and she prayed, she did all of these things, and she could not get the daughter to be well again. So she made a pact with the devil. She made a pact with His Infernal Majesty. And the devil said that, I will cure your daughter, this is how the legend goes, and you will create a cartoon character that will serve as my emissary on Earth, basically.
Oh, my God. God, I want to hear this story, but we're running out of time. We take it over the next side, right? We take it the next side of the hour?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I want you to tell that story about Hello Kitty, because this is something I never knew. Ryan Gable with Set on Ground Zero. Back with more. Don't go away. Zero. Call tonight, 888-673-3700. That's 888-673-3700. So I lifted my blindfold and looked at Facebook and Twitter tonight, and there's a mixed review of everything. But what gets me are those who say, it's only a movie, Clyde, come on. Is I don't watch anything that Hollywood puts out. I haven't seen a movie in 25 years. I will not participate in Hollywood scum. And stuff like that I read, and I'm like thinking, really? You must be a real fun person at parties, right? I mean, what do you talk about? If you don't watch movies, if you don't watch TV shows, what do you talk about? Deer hunting? Okay, let's talk about deer hunting. I don't know. I mean, if you don't participate in pop culture, if you're not aware of pop culture, how can you be relevant? That's what bothers me. And you don't have to participate in, well, I'm going to change my life because of pop culture. No, you can actually, you know, still be aware of things, but not necessarily participate in them. And when you're observing things with discernment, once again, the blindfold of discernment, as my guest Ryan Gable talks about, it's like, yeah, okay. So you have a little bit of discernment and you can figure out what's going on. And to be honest, if you want to know about movies, if you want to know about art, if you want to know, it's a reflection of a lot of what we are and what we are probably going to end up being. Because, you know, many times on this program, and I asked somebody, I just asked them when they said, well, it was just a movie. And I thought, well, do you believe in predictive programming? Everybody says that it's just a movie cannot believe in predictive programming. Because that's the whole point. I mean, all these people saying, what about The Simpsons and how uncannily they forecast 9/11? Well, it was just a movie. It was just a TV show. Then predictive programming's bunk. The revelation of the method's bunk. The uncloaking of all things is bunk. Okay? So you can't have one without the other. If you think that it's all bunk, or if you think it's more than or less than a movie or whatever, you can't believe in predictive programming, because then you're saying, well, man, that's all nonsense. Did I get my deer? I mean, that's basically what you're saying. Because they are all glimpses into the future, and some people argue that films such as Bandersnatch and TV shows like Bandersnatch and movies like Bird Box, these are films that are literally predictive programmed to acclimate society into accepting or moving towards a new way of living. It's programming and control. And it can be used as a revelation of the method, an axiom that is most often abused in the conspiracy fringe circles, because paranoia dictates that there is often bad intent with this type of media magic, and at times there's a tendency to write off coincidence and synchronicity as mere fantasies. However, it is not all out of the question to determine that perhaps there's an agenda in the media to approximate or force structure events in fiction in order to lessen the blow when they occur in our reality, when they show up on the timeline. And reality has this uncanny knack for imitating cinematic fiction. And it used to be that media and movies and whatever were a prosthesis for memory. And now it seems to be the vehicle for predicting the future or for structuring behaviors with the use of esoteric images and so-called magical sigils that trigger programming mechanisms that exist in the unconscious mind. The media now encompasses more than just reporting events. It provides a syntax for how we are to view the moments in reality and how they can force structure future events. Case in point, Bandersnatch. Case in point, the movie Bird Box. And as I said earlier, I think that Bird Box is a metaphor for Twitter, which is, of course, encompasses everything that is social media. And basically, the characters have to wear the blindfold of discernment, or they will literally kill themselves slowly, having being exposed to what the internet gives them and what the internet is doing to people. Ryan Gable is my guest tonight on Ground Zero, and he has a few thoughts too along the lines of what I was thinking, but he can expand a little bit more on this concept of force structuring reality with the use of.
I'm going to have that was Clyde Lewis. We're not going to play the whole clip, but I'm going to give you his address. It's groundzero.com, and you'll find Friday night's program on there. And he's written a very, very good article that can go along with this and tell you what's going on. Anyway, what they were talking about was Bird Box, okay? And Bird Box is a Netflix horror movie. And Netflix is posting a tweet claiming that they had over 45 million people had streamed the horror movie Bird Box, shattering its previous records for most streams in an opening week. It said, between this film and the Black Mirror episode Bandersnatch, Netflix has successfully hijacked. This is according to Clyde Lewis's opinion. I'm quoting right directly from his article. Hijacked the pop culture in a way, as the question everybody is asking is whether or not they have seen Bird Box or Bandersnatch and so forth. These episodes, okay, are, he believes, predictive programming, and they're creating a future. See what I mean? And so forth. And this is where the danger, it says the unique thing about the Bandersnatch is that instead of just passively watching a movie, the viewers get to choose what the main character does next. They said some choices are seemingly innocent, like what music to play, okay, what to eat for breakfast, but then quickly moves on to questions about career decisions, mental health issues, and even whether to kill other characters. And he says, Clyde was saying, now he was very sensitive about a scene where Clyde made the choice to save a character from a bad acid trip by choosing to have him jump off of a high-rise apartment to his death. Clive's saying it's like playing God in a televised Sims game. The scary part going on, what Clive says, was not just the fact that the film lets you choose how to kill off characters. I found out that my choices were actually tallied in a database that Netflix assures us that it's a secure database. So they're collecting not only as you're watching this, these movies and making choices, real life choices, which takes the story in different ways, but they're actually creating a database of your choices. It said that Netflix acquires a lot of data about its user. This includes information about your viewing habits on the platform and like the platforms you choose to watch and how long you watch them for. It uses data to recommend new shows it thinks you'll enjoy, as well as to improve the customer service for marketing purposes and so forth. And what are they going to do with this highly emotional information? And this is really conditioning on a far advanced basis. Netflix has a huge influence on how millions of people get cultural and political information. In September 2018, they had 137.1 million subscribers, all of whom are plugged into their algorithm. So we all know how algorithms help you make choices or make choices for you, right? And so it's what they provide for you in the way of entertainment or take away or that doesn't exist that can make these you reach certain conclusions. Well, that's the same thing about Facebook or even Twitter. The people that they leave on there that are say liberal versus conservatives, they'll take off the conservatives and leave the liberal people in there to express certain ideas. And so they can actually, they do censorship actually. And some of this stuff is done on the fly, and it's also done behind the scenes. So it's stealth. There's a stealth mode of this. It says that Bird Box star Sandra Bullock, John Malkovich, and Sarah Paulson, and now they have heard so many mixed feelings about this film, mainly because no one can agree over whether it is a film about a apocalyptic alien invasion, an invasion of shadowy demons that when seen cause people to kill themselves. See, I mean, these things, he has trailers in here on this. So go into groundzeromedia.org. I think it's the site to see his article here. And I highly recommend to look at this and not get trapped into this particular, you could say, way of thinking. It's Alan Watt. Years ago, Charlotte Littlefield and I interviewed Alan Watt. This was like 7-8 years ago. Charlotte and I have been broadcasting well over 12 years now. So we had Alan Watt in there. We also had a couple of brothers that wrote a book about scientific dictatorships and so forth. And then the British have been the leaders in much of this geopolitical. And I'll give you a couple of examples is that when the Russians under the Tsar Nicholas started industrializing, the Western industrial base saw that as a competition. And so, you know, there was financing of the Bolshevik Revolution by New York money and UK money and European mainland German financiers, you could say. And they financed Lenin and those others, Trotsky and others, and Stalin to foment that revolution. And they backed it and they financed it. And the story goes that they went in there afterwards and got all the gold that the Russians had. And then it was a grand experiment. So has Russia been a grand experiment by the New World Order all this time? That's what's interesting aspect of what we think's going on. Now, earlier on, when the East India Company was created, they also envisioned that China one day would be an economic might because of the people. So my own opinion, where the geopolitics came into play by the British in particular, because they had that the East India Company was their vehicle for trade to the Far East, was give them opium, right? And debilitate the people. Keep them off balance, keep them all drugged up, and then go in there and for the opium you imported into China, then demand gold. So you got their gold, see? And that's exactly what happened. They fought a series of wars, the opium wars over this. And China finally had to make a drug use to be a capital offense and just had to execute people on a grand scale to stamp out the drug use in China. But the British were making a fortune and other players were also making a fortune. Later on, when Mao Zedong came to power, he was brought to power by these same people. We believe that they brought Mao Zedong to power to also continue to keep China from industrializing, because with a Marxist communist philosophy, then they wouldn't have the highly industrialized efficiency of Western industrialists like the West did, like the United States and Europe and UK did, see. And so they kept them down, see. And this is the way they play the game, and it's a very, very vicious game. It's not a pretty game. But so this program on Ground Zero by Clyde Lewis, I think, is a very important program. You can go in there and you can listen to his program also on SoundCloud. You can find his SoundCloud.com, Ground Zero Media. You can go in there and you can listen to this whole program on SoundCloud. So go in there and listen to this whole program, and I'll get you some click-offs up tonight on this page. They'll be up there so you can more easily navigate into those sites and so forth. Because this stuff is very, very important. What's really disheartening that's going on is this continued democratic attack on Trump, who's trying to keep us out of this new world order. And but they're coming from the left. What's happened over the years is that the left, this collective left, is being financed to bring about world communism. And with a world communist type of state, you could say then they can more easily manipulate the people through entitlements or benefit programs. And I've said this time and time again, I'm going to keep repeating it, you know, because it's so important. And that's why all of this stuff that we're entering into now with this Netflix, this Bird Box, and this Bandersnatch thing or whatever they call it, is very, very dangerous in the sense that it begins to have a tremendous impact, okay? This Bird Box, that's one of the deals. And then the other one is called Bandersnatch, and you can make choices in there about who you want to kill and things like, oh, that's just wonderful, isn't it? Teaching people, conditioning people, hardening them. And then, you know, I have a good friend here that watches quite a bit of television. And I believe he's been telling me lately that some of the programs, what they do is they rationalize the use of torture, because if we don't get this information, then so many other people will die. So the torture is warranted. That's just one little aspect of what's going on behind the scenes. Otherwise, we have a delusional society is what I've been working on in the last few years. And I'm working on something that I believe will be important from a writing viewpoint. But basically, it's stating that we're in a delusional state and we don't come out of that state, very easily to begin to perceive truth and become rational. I think what's going on is that we're irrational, but we're highly educated and think, but we're irrational and not being able to see our state of irrationality. But anyway, the world is a very, very tough place to navigate. We have very, very tough choices to make, and it's not easy. We still have this immigration problem on our south border. Elizabeth Warren is saying she's running for president. Now she sits there and opens a beer bottle and drinks beer on, like she's a good old girl beer drinking and trying to associate with the middle class or your working people. Say, I mean, what juvenile crap, you know, what is that, you know? I mean, it's juvenile, right? But she's also the one that came up with, she's a native Indian and came up with less percentages than the average American probably, you know? And Trump is saying he's just going to close down, continue to close down the government. And Rand Paul is saying, well, Trump, go ahead and take $2.5 billion and get this thing done. Now, one thing about Trump that surprises you, okay, he's very, very practical, see. And as a result, he'll make deals when you don't think he's going to make a deal, see. He's very, very down to earth in realizing at times that that he has to make deals, and he will make deals and back off. He might say something very adamantly like, I'm just going to close it down, you know, for weeks or months. And, but he doesn't, you know, really want to do that. But he's playing the game, you could say, you know, trying to drag out the negotiations so that he can have some kind of advantage. See, but in doing that, he's running into a newly elected Democratic Congress on the House side that is determined to hate him. And this hatred has been fomented, by the Hillary gang. Okay. And they got out there and they were successful at fomenting and creating and stirring up, hatred within the Democratic, community of voters and supporters that they had, and start attacking Trump. They started attacking him on he's a racist. They started attacking him that he didn't care about women. That they put that deal up. The problem with what's going on is that Trump has enemies. Obviously on the Democratic side, but also he has enemies within the Republican Party. These recent disses that Romney, you know, Senator Romney was making about Trump. And now what's the most dangerous thing that I've been noticing lately is they're beginning to say that he's not stable, you know. They're trying to get back to this 25th, you know, amendment where you can remove a president for not being stable or, you know, so forth. And they're trying to inject into the discussion that Trump isn't quite there all the time and that he's not quite stable, and that, gosh, we got to be careful, you know, with him, and we got to look at what he says, and you know, it could be a problem. And they even injected it, you know, in the first 2 years about the atomic codes that they carry, the football that special military man carries, to so that the president can direct our atomic weapons and give authority to the use of those against perhaps an attacking enemy and so forth. But anyway, that's been going on within the first 2 years. Pelosi has a new bill that passed the House. We don't know what it's actually. It gets into the rules of the House is what it got into. And, she's tightening up on the rules and so forth in the House because she has the votes. Okay. And, we're seeing her exert her power, see. Some of the things, the new bill requires 10 years of presidential tax returns. But that bill's not going to go anywhere because it'll be stopped in the Senate. And then they're laying down an impeachment trap here. You know, will the president jump into it? There's all kinds of conjecture there, as to what they're going to try to do. Maxine Waters, she's out there screaming impeachment all the time in California and so forth. But, we just have an uproar that's underway, and it's not pleasant for Trump to try to get back to managing the country in a sane way, but he has his own problems. I'm on his side because I'm a conservative type of thinker, and I want to try to regain our industrial base to a certain degree. and Trump's beginning to do that. These last figures that we have that came out were very, very good on the economy. We had a flood of new in jobs and so forth, and it just really, really was hardening. And then the market, the stock market, has been recovering some. This is where Trump, I'll tell you where Trump makes his mistakes, okay? And this is so obvious that I've been talking about it ever since he took office. When he started tying his administration to the stock market, that was a mistake. When it was going up, he could just brag about it. Oh, look how strong it is. Then it reversed and started perhaps on a bear market or some kind of major adjustment. And then they could say, look what's happening. And then the Fed comes in there and they're independent, you know, once after they're appointed. And then he goes and raises some interest rates, the Fed, you know, chairman. And then he's after him now. Trump's after him now, dissing him. And so it goes like that. And then now the stock market is beginning to recover again. And Trump's jumped back in there. Oh, look at the stock market. Well, he shouldn't tie his administration, the success or failure, to the stock market. Stock market is fluctuating from buyers and sellers all the time. And you can't always perceive, or you can't always understand, or even explain the moves of the stock market at times, because there is an emotional base, you know, for people buying and selling. So on that level, you know, you just can't always be sure about what the market's doing for what exact reason. Now, this Ocasio-Cortez, she wants to raise tax rates to 70%, and in New York, it would get it up to 80-something percent total tax, 82.7% for the richest New Yorkers. So she's really for, you know, transfer of wealth there on that. And we've got the football season. Let me mention that. The Cowboys are going to play Washington tonight. And they're the wild card. But for some reason, Dallas has been doing pretty good. So I'll be watching that, you know, during our broadcast tonight later. You know, after we start our broadcast, I'll be watching parts of it while we're live and broadcasting. But anyway, that is a surprise, you know, that's happening. And, we're beginning to see some positive things occur. And what we're seeing, like, Orban over there in Hungary, he's for the statist system. We've seen this Yellow Jacket uprising in France, and they're complaining about this New World Order and so forth that they don't want to seem to be part of, okay? And, you know, we're just beginning to see some change and some, you know, awakening occur. On the other hand, we have a rising millennial class that they're totally into high tech, and they're totally into the Democratic Party, and they don't even know, you know, what I mean, natural law or anything else. They don't even have an idea about what natural law is or where it came from or anything else. So they're just continuing to be a problem. I see their little sports cars go by all the time, little Porsches and SUVs and also Jaguar SUVs with that Beto thing here in Texas, you know, which they supported him. But they want to make a fortune in a high-tech field, but then buy all these expensive cars, but then they're ushering in a collective, you know, socialist guy like Beto. See, I mean, it doesn't make sense, because they've never been educated in these school systems, these public schools. They're not turning out educated people. They can't even read. There's high percentages of high school graduates that can't read that well. They can't even do math. You go into a fast food place and get change, they can't make change. And so there's just multiple problems with some of these people. And, it's not working, you know. And, it never has worked here, in the last decade or so. And also, we're pouring more and more money all the time into these school systems. We're spending more and more money. We're going into a smaller ratio in many cases of students to teachers, like 15 or so per teacher. But I've always maintained on the education, side that our real problem and debasement has occurred through the family. As the families begin to break up for one reason or another, then our school system, our children are not happy. And for families to have children that are well adjusted and so forth, you need a father and a mother in the home. The father is like, establishes, discipline and rules. And if you violate those rules, you get it. It used to be where if we were bothering my mom and gave my mom a bunch of hell and she got fed up, well, she'd tell my dad when he came home and he put the belt on us. And when he put the belt on us, boy, we straightened up then. We didn't want to get the belt again, see. But we were young then. And of course with older children that you can't do that. But then they came in and said no corporal punishment. You had all these different doctors, Dr. Spock and all this stuff. And you had a lot of people that, expressed certain ideas that have not been healthy for the society. And you had all these newfangled ideas about education. And what are the results? Results are failure. We have not had success, but we've had failure in these so-called new liberal ideas, whether you're talking about, school systems or political systems or whatever. We've had a declining society, a declining, a debasement has occurred. And it's been the attack on culture, the culture war, see? Do your own thing, society. If it feels good, just do it. It doesn't matter, what anyone thinks or does. Just go out and do it. And so that's actually what we've have evolved into. Now, getting back to what they're putting out in the entertainment area with this Bird Box and all this other Bandersnatch from Netflix, the tremendous reach that they're beginning to have will have a big impact. So we're going to have children out there that watch this stuff and then commit suicide and so forth. We've had experiences of that, occur already, where people have actually affected people over the internet to a state of young people where they were saddened or they were depressed and they did commit suicide. So we're going to have that involved in all of this new high tech stuff. I'd say, well, parents out there, you better be careful better monitor what your children are watching. And if Netflix continues in this mode of putting forth these kinds of, I'd say take next Netflix down. I'd get off Netflix then. I'm going to watch this sooner or later, these horror things, just to see. Or I have friends that I can trust their opinion on these and tell me what they think. But so I'll probably go by that. Well, I want to thank everyone out there for listening tonight, and we certainly appreciate each and every one of you. And every life is precious in this world, and we really want a peaceful world, and we want to get out of all these wars, and we need to put our soldiers back home, and we need to reinforce our border security and whatever. And Trump is doing a good job. We thank him for what he's doing. But anyway, thank you again for listening to this. Charlotte Littlefield Brown and I certainly thank you profusely. And God bless each and every one of you out there in the listening audience. And good night and good luck. Bye-bye.